this morning.
The Cultural and Outdoor Resources Finance Division meeting will come to order. We welcome the Minnesota Tourism Board, and we want to hear all about what we heard in the 92nd, that first meeting, about the importance of tourism in Minnesota and explore Minnesota. And now we get to it in detail. Thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Edmond. I'm Director of the Explore Minnesota Tourism. Appreciate the opportunity this morning to talk to you a little bit about Explore Minnesota Tourism and some of the things that we do. Also with me today are my Industry Relations Manager, Colleen Tollison, and my Operations Manager, Peggy Nasby. They're in the audience, and they'll be here in case you ask me some extremely difficult questions that they can assist me with. But I'm going to kind of quickly go through this presentation and make sure I allow time for any questions and answers. What basically I'm going to do this morning is kind of just give you a brief little overview of tourism in Minnesota, provide an agency profile of Explore Minnesota Tourism, discuss our goals, how we measure what we do, look at our budget, both our current year budget as well as the governor's recommendation for Explore Minnesota Tourism for the next biennium, and then talk a little bit about what the outlook is for tourism in Minnesota, because this is a very critical time for many industries, tourism included, how we're addressing that, and then a little bit about our vision for the future. So to begin, tourism in Minnesota is a huge industry. It is an $11 billion industry. And I know you hear a lot of big numbers and big figures, but to put it another way, tourism is comparable to agriculture in terms of its economic importance to the state. It generates over $679 million in sales tax revenue for Minnesota, and it represents over 247,000 jobs that are specifically related to the leisure and hospitality industry. And why do we do this, and why do other agencies, tourism agencies throughout the country, are they involved in tourism? Because of the return on investment. For every dollar that we invest in tourism, we bring back $4.60 in new state and local taxes, $20 in wages, and $53 in gross sales. So there is a significant return on the efforts we do to promote travel and tourism in Minnesota. And I think two of the things that are probably particularly key to the Minnesota legislature when they think about our industry is what it can do in terms of revenue and job creation. And these statistics kind of really jump out at you when you... Madam Chair, question?
No, I need to say something.
No, it's just...
What?
Oh, sorry. When you look at the total number of sales tax, the revenue that's generated from sales tax in Minnesota, travel and tourism, leisure and hospitality industry represents 15% of all the sales tax generated by Minnesota every year. That's a staggering figure. And if you look at the number of jobs in the leisure and hospitality industry, 10% of the total private sector employment in the state comes from the leisure and hospitality industry. So it's a very big part of our economy. And if you look at in terms of what tourism generates, without the tax revenue generated by the travel and tourism industry, each household would pay $898 more in taxes. And these are figures that come from the U.S. Travel Association, formerly TIA, based on studies of what travel and tourism brings to our economy in the United States. So our mission at Explore Minnesota Tourism is very simple. It's to promote travel to and within the state of Minnesota. We represent thousands of private sector accommodations and attractions and events in Minnesota, and we entice visitors to the parks, trails, zoos, and historic and cultural attractions throughout the state, many of the things that comes under the jurisdiction of this committee. Our goals, we have four main goals. It's very simple: to increase the number of resident and non-resident travelers to Minnesota, to grow receipts and sales of tourism in Minnesota, to generate increased state and local tax revenue from tourism, and to increase leisure and hospitality employment. Our agency, Explore Minnesota Tourism, is a relatively small agency. We used to be a part of Department of Trade and Economic Development, and then we merged with Employment and Economic Development. And in 2004, we became a separate agency, but we're still small. We have full and part-time employees, 50 full-time equivalents. In addition to our headquarters office here in St. Paul, we have offices in Brainerd, Duluth, Thief River Falls, and Mankato. And we do also man 6 state travel information centers. We do several others in partnership with local tourism organizations, as well as we designate certain affiliate travel information centers throughout the state. So basically, we're about 50 full-time equivalents within Explorers of Tourism. Our core functions are in 4 basic areas, and this is kind of how we're organized: communications, industry relations, marketing research, and operations and consumer services. And I'll just briefly talk a little bit about what we do in each of those areas. The communications area within Explore Minnesota Tourism handles a lot of our media relations in order to generate positive coverage about travel. We work primarily with travel writers all throughout Minnesota, the region, and the United States, as well as the world. We do a number of different publications, many of them you've seen. I think you have a statewide guide in front of you, but we do special publications in fishing and snowmobiling, wildlife, scenic byways, etc. And many of these we do in partnership with publishers in the private sector in order to produce them at low or no cost to the state. And then also in this area, our big point of contact is the Explore Minnesota website, where travelers are more and more going to find information about travel in the state. Our marketing and research area, that's kind of where it's probably the most visible activities of what we do. We do a wide variety of broadcast, print, and electronic media efforts. Our primary markets are the U.S. North Central region, Minnesota, and the surrounding states, the Dakotas, Iowa, and Wisconsin. We also market a little bit internationally. We don't put advertising per se in there. We do a lot of cooperation with other states, such as the Great Lakes states and Mississippi River states, as well as some of our own in marketing to Canada, Japan, the UK, Germany, and Scandinavia. We are also looking at China as another growing market for Minnesota. Market to groups, and then we do a lot of research in-house, as well as provided by other sources. Our industry relations area, I mentioned the offices we have throughout the state. This map here, if you can see it on the overhead, represents 5 regions in Minnesota. We just recently reorganized these regions, but we work with organizations and associations throughout the state to facilitate interagency partnerships, educational programs, and we also provide grants to nonprofit tourism organizations throughout the state to assist them in their local marketing efforts. In our operations and consumers area, that's where we handle customer inquiries. That's where we deal with the customers on a daily basis through phone, fax, internet. We do have an in-house call center. We operate travel information centers, and we maintain a very extensive database of literally thousands of accommodations, attractions, tourism organizations, and events. Now, if you look at some of our key measures, thinking back to what our goals are, these next 2 slides just kind of highlight the growth in leisure and hospitality sales. This first one here shows that it's continual, steady growth of gross sales. In 2008 is a very unusual year. We did see the summer continuing increase in growth in sales. Fall started to taper off. The year actually ended with flat to slightly positive gross sales in Minnesota. A lot of that is measured through Smith Travel occupancy and revenue reports. When you look at the sales tax, we don't have all of those statistics yet for 2008, but you'll see a continual growth of sales tax that's generated for Minnesota. Again, we're looking at probably a flat or a slight increase in sales tax revenue in 2008. And then in tourism, leisure and hospitality employment, we're up to 248,000 jobs. We did see a slight decrease in leisure and hospitality employment in 2008, according to some of the recent statistics that I have seen from Employment and Economic Development, a drop of about 8,000 in 2008. So we are starting to see a little bit of a downturn based on what's going on with the economy there. I did mention our marketing. I'm not going to show you all of our ads because we'd be taking up way too much time. But as you know, we provide a wide variety. We produce a wide variety of television ads, basically promoting all aspects of travel in Minnesota. We have these 15-second spots that are based on consumers talking about their favorite activities in Minnesota, whether that be parks, trails, shopping, nightlife, small towns, large towns, etc. And so we use that through television, we use that through electronic media, as well as various print sources. I already mentioned our website. This is the primary mechanism where people now are going. That's where we've seen our substantial growth. We saw about an increase in 30% last year, the number of users going to our website looking for travel information. The tourism industry has all provided the opportunity through our extranet to provide free information about their property, their event, their attraction, their park on exploreminnesota.com. And this is where people go for their vacation planning. A key part of this is the My Favorite Minnesota, where this is sort of the YouTube, if you will, of our website. We are one of the first states to actually do this, where people upload information about what they like to do, what they like to see. They upload videos, they upload photographs, lists, they share that with others. Many other states now have been following our lead on this when we first launched this, but this is actually a very fun place to go to find people's videos and lists and recommendations of what to do in the state. And then last year we also did a rather extensive partnership promotion. You may have seen some of the advertising on this. We did three sweepstakes where we extend our media buy with a wide variety of partners, and we were able to generate approximately $1 million of partnership dollars, cash and in kind, to support this and extend our reach, as well as to get traffic and inquiries. About 150,000 people came to enter into this contest to win prizes as well as potential trips to explore Minnesota, 75% of them coming from Minnesota and the surrounding states. And I wasn't sure I was going to throw this slide in there, but it is something that we are proud of. The U.S. Travel Administration, the U.S. Travel and I think it's the TIA, it's now called the U.S. Travel Association, annually produces this Odyssey Award for entities about best marketing in the United States. And the competition isn't just state tourism agencies, it's not just VMOs, it's also private sector groups such as Carnival Cruise Line, Hilton Hotels, etc. And Explore Minnesota received this award for the best advertising in the United States two out of the last 4 years. So we're very, very proud of that. Another thing I wanted to mention is that the legislature a couple of years ago asked us to look into the topic of green travel and to make a recommendation to the legislature about how we can better promote Minnesota as a green state. We have completed that report and we're now on the implementation part of that Travel Green program, and it has three elements. One element is education, and we're working with the University of Minnesota Tourism Center to provide information to the tourism industry on how they can promote and develop sustainable tourism, how they can implement green practices. That's the first phase. The second phase involves our extranet, where industry is now able to report those things that they are doing in terms of sustainable tourism, whether it's shoreline management practices, whether it's energy conservation, whether it's local foods. And that is actually going on right now when the industry is updating their database on exploreminnesota.com. And then the third phase is marketing that to consumers. So then when consumers are looking to differentiate between a property or an area, they can find out what those businesses are in fact doing to support sustainable tourism. And it gives us a real point of difference between other states and other properties, and it also encourages the industry to do more without creating this top-down certification form approach. It's basically consumers will find out what's going on. If they're not doing it, they probably won't go there. And we're hoping that that will encourage more green travel practices in the United States. Now we get to some of our budget issues. First of all, to mention our fiscal year 09, our current year budget, we have a $10 million operating budget, a $500,000 In addition, is public-private incentive funding. We have to bring in money from the private sector in order to generate this additional $500,000. Also included in our budget is the film board and a film-based program of $650,000. And I understand Lucinda Winter will be talking about that a little bit more. But our total budget in 2009 was $11.13 million. It's a lot of money, but if you look at the tourism budget throughout the country, we've actually slipped. We've gone from 25th to now 30th in the United States in total tourism budget. Our private sector match that I mentioned, we did receive $500,000 in incentive funding, and we're required to match that through private sector dollars. So for every $3 we bring in from the private sector, then if we do that, then we get another dollar from the general fund, up to $500,000. The budget basically is broken down into these areas: communications, marketing and research, primarily marketing. That's where our industry wants us to promote travel into Minnesota. Industry relations and grants, 16%. Operations and consumer services, responding to individual consumers, 30%. And then the travel information centers, 7%. And again, I won't mention too much about the Snowbait program, but that is included in our budget. In addition to the money that's specifically for the Snowbait, last year the legislature did provide an additional $500,000 for a special film project. And again, Lucinda will probably talk more about that. The other thing that I wanted to mention on our current year budget is that there was an allotment just a few weeks ago of Explore Minnesota Fiscal 09 funds. Originally, we were told that when the governor was looking for unallotments, they were looking at the cabinet-level agencies, but they had to dig a little bit deeper beyond that. So we were asked to basically provide an unallotment of $300,000. That amount was determined by based on 5% of any unspent funds as of December 5th, 2008. And basically what we were able to do in order to provide those dollars for the unallotment, we reduced some of our fulfillment costs, we reduced some of our inquiry-generating tactics, we eliminated one group and one travel trade show, we reduced the purchase of some of the research that we had planned to do, and we did eliminate our winter grants for the 09-10 season. And the grants, just to point out, the winter grants is the smallest portion of our grants. I think it's about $60,000. Roughly 10 to 15, depends on the year. Organizations apply for those grant dollars, and they're anywhere between $2,000 and $5,000 each of those cap of $5,000. And we thought that was the most, one of the easiest ways that we could come up with these dollars and still fulfill our mission. So that's how we handled that's our 09 budget, and that's how we handled the unallotment. Now, when you get to the fiscal year 10 and 11 budget recommendations of the governor, you probably have seen some of those, but the governor's recommendation includes a $1.1 million reduction in base funding for Explore Minnesota tourism each year. There still is the incentive funding that we are required to bring in a 3-to-1 match, but there is an overall reduction, and it amounts to about 10% of the overall operating budget of Explore Minnesota Tourism. And so now the question I'm sure that many of you have, and many of my industry and staff, is, so how are you going to absorb that? What are you going to do? And so I just want to talk a little bit about that. So we've met with all of our units and all of our managers to try to discuss how we are going to absorb this 10% reduction. And we looked at all programs, trying to focus on those programs to bring in the best return on our investment, and still allow us to fulfill our mission. So what it means is that we are going to have to delay certain enhancements to our ExploreMinnesota.com website. Again, that's the primary mechanism where travelers come for travel information, but a website is never done. You're always looking for ways to make it work better and faster and meet the needs of consumers. There are some things that we had planned on that. Particularly, we are planning a mobile site next spring, but we're not able to do the kind of mobile site that we wanted to do with mapping, et cetera. So we're doing a very simple mobile site, so we're reducing that. We're going to be reducing the amount that we're spending on professional and technical contracts. We do work with, for instance, with advertising agencies that has the media buying capabilities and the creative services that we do not have, and so we're going to be reducing some of the dollars that we're spending through those professional and technical contracts. We're going to reduce some of our print production. That will in turn also reduce some of our fulfillment costs, and we'll also reduce some of our partnership and innovative grant programs. Our partnership and innovative grant programs is about $800,000 total within our budget. We're not proposing to eliminate those. The industry depends on those to supplement their funding to market communities throughout the state. But we are going to be reducing the amounts, possibly lowering the cap, and perhaps going to back to the level that we were 2 years ago, but still allowing those grants to serve the purpose of helping communities promote travel. And then we're also going to be looking at reducing marketing partnerships, reducing some participation in some trade shows and educational events. There is a decrease in funding for the Snowbase program in discussion with the Minnesota Film and TV Board. We asked them to come up with a way for a 10% reduction, just like we did. Their recommendation was, instead of taking it out of operational funding, take it out of the Snowbase dollars. So per their recommendation, it includes a reduction, I think it's about $90,000 in the Snowbase, but our budget still does have fund in it for the film board and for the Snowbase for the next two fiscal years. And so we're still trying to, Madam Chair and members, what we're doing with this budget is trying to deal with the tough situation as we all are and to find things that are most effective to continue to fulfill our mission, but it will, in fact, reduce the overall marketing that we do at Explore Minnesota Tourism. Now, I want to quickly here go through a couple of things that are planned in the future, and I think it's important to state what the outlook is for travel and tourism in Minnesota. And it's very clear that 2009 is going to be a very unusual year, unlike anything we've experienced, that I've experienced since I've been director. Occupancy is projected to be down in 2009 and not recover until at least 2010. Consumer confidence is extremely low, and people are very concerned about jobs, they're very concerned about retirement and their discretionary spending. But we do feel that despite this leisure travel, people still want to get away. Get to their own mental health or their own physical health. And so they will be taking shorter trips, staying closer to home, and spending less. From a recent presentation we had at our state tourism conference, a renowned researcher, Peter Yesowitz, said that American travelers are trading down, but they're not trading out. And leisure travel remains a high priority. So we're looking at changing our messages to emphasize value. That's very important. Connecting with others, maintaining a balance in life, and making memories. One of the things that we're doing is we're adjusting our spring-summer campaign. In addition to promoting all of the things that we have to do in the state of Minnesota, we're also promoting the concept of take a break. The people need a break from the stress in their life. So we are going to be promoting travel closer to home, promoting the importance of vacations and relief from stress, and then directing our message to Minnesota and to nearby markets. The other thing that we're doing, is this is sort of a new area for us, is that we're marketing the concept of meetings and conventions. And this is something that was requested by the CDDs and the destinations all throughout the state. The state of Minnesota is not... Convention and Visitors Bureau. There are about 90 Convention and Visitors Bureaus throughout Minnesota. And a lot of these convention and visitors bureaus did not, in the past, have this, were looking to the state to play a role in promoting meetings and conventions. But due to the crisis that we're all facing, they asked that the state do take a role. So we are engaging in a short-term awareness plan to promote the concept of meetings and conventions in Minnesota, that it's good for business and it's good for the state. We're not investing significant dollars into this campaign. It's mostly PR, awareness efforts, but we're promoting under the banner of Meet in Minnesota, Good for Business. And so you'll be hearing a little bit more about that in the next few months. And the other thing that we're doing is we're also looking, as never before, to cooperate with other agencies to market Minnesota travel. We're all in this game together, and we all have a stake in people visiting parks, visiting zoos, visiting artistic attractions. And we're trying to work with existing resources to market what we have in the state. And we're actually working right now on an initial program with the Department of Natural Resources was basically promoting the parks, the parks and the trails and the outdoor recreation. This is not an ad here, but it represents sort of a concept of Minnesota parks. You own it, you enjoy it. Go out and enjoy it. Because people are going to be traveling closer to home and visiting the things that are in their backyard. And a lot of these destinations depend on travelers for revenue to maintain and preserve them. And so we hope to expand this concept of cooperative agency marketing over the next several months and hopefully years ahead. And the last thing that I'll mention is that while we're looking very closely at what's happening today and what's happening in the next year, we've also been engaging in a process with our industry to look at tourism beyond. Look at where do we see our industry going 10 years from now. So this last summer, we've been engaging on a 2020 visioning process where I've been meeting with tourism organizations all throughout the state, from Duluth to Walker to Owatonna to Rochester, and asking them what are the key issues that are needed to grow tourism in Minnesota. We've had industry surveys to ask them what issues are important for the future of tourism. We actually just last week focused our tourism conference on this topic. And what we found out is that we really focused it on several core areas. The need for tourism as it relates to the environment, as it relates to transportation, business operations, product development, as well as marketing. And we'll have this report, Madam Chair and members, for you within the next month completed to tell you what the industry is saying and where do we need to go and how do we all lead, not just Explore Minnesota Tourism, but many organizations. And so our blueprint for tourism will be complete next week. And one other thing, Madam Chair, I don't have a copy of a survey we did at our tourism conference last week where we had the entire tourism industry gathered. We did some immediate online voting of important issues for tourism. And in response to your assignment, I think at a previous meeting, we asked the question, what would you like to see the funding used in the legacy amendment in the next several years? And we have some very interesting answers to share with you representing the responses of the entire Minnesota tourism industry. So we got more than you three.
We'll be interested in seeing that.
So in conclusion, tourism, I think, can be part of our economic recovery. It influences people's decisions to visit parks and trails and theaters and museums. It also influences sporting events and accommodations and attractions. It's fun, but it's also an important business that impacts our state's economic recovery. We've worked very hard at Explore Minnesota Tourism over the years to grow travel, and we're up to the challenge and hope to work with you to keep our $11 billion industry strong now and in the years to come. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. Madam Chair, good to see you. I've enjoyed working with you on some things over the years. First of all, the resort industry, we've been losing. How many resorts do we have in Minnesota now, and what has the decline been?
Madam Chair, Representative, if you look at our database right now, there's probably 800 or 900 resorts. We used to have 2,000 probably 20 years ago. We're seeing a significant decline for a wide variety of factors. Many small mom-and-pop operations are having a very hard time making go. A lot of those properties, at least up until recently, have been redeveloped as private homes. You're also seeing a lot of different ownership structures, and you're also seeing a growth in other tourism accommodations. But resorts is sort of a mainstay of what Minnesota tourism is to a lot of people, and we just don't have the resorts that we used to.
Representative Erdahl.
The key measures, you know, basically are still tending in a positive manner. You said in 2008 maybe there's leveling off or so, but in light of the decline in resorts, you mentioned that there were other attractions that were growing. That must offset the decline in resorts. What types of attractions are growing?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative, in the accommodations area, we're seeing different ownership structures as opposed to just a small resort. The shared ownership structures, the fractional ownership. We're seeing more and more hotels that are developed, many on lakes, which are not just your traditional resort, bed and breakfast. And so it's a very differing array. Again, another area that we're seeing a big growth in the accommodations area is private vacation home rentals, which is a whole another hearing probably, but we are asked to look at the growth in vacation home rentals in Minnesota. So in the area of accommodations, huge change. In the area of sort of attractions and events, we're seeing a strong interest in local attractions and events, and I think that's true due to what's happening in the economy, where people aren't going as far. I was at a recent Festival and Events Association meeting a month or so ago, and they had made the comment that participation in local festival events is countercyclical to what's happening with the environment. When people can't afford to hop on a plane and drive very far, they discover the things that are going on in their own backyard. And so we're actually seeing more interest in those kind of things recently than perhaps ever before.
Representative Dawson.
Thank you. Just one more point. Well, and along those lines, the biggest ball of twine in the world wound by one man, of course, is in Darwin in my district, and people are welcome to come and see that. But I don't think it's on the list, but what are the top three tourist attractions in Minnesota?
Edmund.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative, I think you could go on our industry website, and we have a list that we produced several years ago showing what those top attractions are. You have to take a lot of that with a grain of salt because a lot of it is self-reported. So I'm not sure what you believe or would not believe. But I think, you know, what I look at is the reasons that people travel. And one of the top reasons that people travel, what the industry tells me, is our outdoors, is our natural heritage. I've always said that in Minnesota, you know, we don't have lakes and we don't have oceans. We have an awful lot that we can be proud of, whether it's the cultural attractions, the large cities, the small towns, and those are the things that we're talking about. And while, you know, ball of twine may not be tops on the list, it's very important to, well, maybe it is, but it's very important in certain parts of the state. So, again, I would take that. It depends on who you ask what that list is. In Bloomington, you'll get one answer. In Owatonna, you get another.
Just point out that Weird Al Yankovic did come to Darwin.
Representative Union.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
We are over time, so if we could shorten the answer some of
okay. This will be a real quick question. In the Environment Finance Committee last year, some resort folks testified that folks were complaining about the condition of our trails and the industry was saying people aren't coming because our trails are in such bad shape. Do you get that feedback?
Mr. Edmonds.
I get the feedback from our industry that investment in trails is very important to tourism. Again, going back to our tourism conference last week, that was one of the answers that came out from our industry, that we need to continually invest in trails. From consumers, I'm not sure I really have anything definite that I can point to that indicates a reaction to the conditions of that, but I do know that is one of the things that we promote. And it's one of the reasons that people like to travel, the state, and that they will want to do now more than ever.
Representative Laughlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I'm impressed by your Tourism and the Economy booklet, and I was surprised to see that the Leavenworth County metro area was about 65% or 70% in that range of the economic impact. Is that primarily, do you think, convention-related business? And did the special efforts that you did in connection with the RNC this past summer result in people staying longer? Do we have any evidence that those special efforts made a difference in terms of people coming here for the convention and then going to Greater Minnesota or doing something else?
Well, take your last, Madam Chair, take your last question first. Personally, what I saw as the biggest benefit of the RNC is the national media attention on Minnesota. It's hard to quantify how many extra nights we got on that. I don't think that people actually travel too much beyond the Twin Cities area. A lot of the people that were attending were here for the convention, and that's pretty much it. So we didn't see a whole lot of that, but it does have, it did have the impact, I think, of getting Minnesota on the map and people talking about it, which they are still today. As far as your question regarding the economic impact, that's, I'm glad you point, you observe that, because people forget. They think that tourism is just some resorts up north or attractions in southern Minnesota. Over 50% is in Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and it's not just meetings and conventions. It's people coming, particularly from other states. They come to Minneapolis-St. Paul area for shopping, for restaurants, for sporting events, for arts and things like that. So yes, the business travel is a part of it, but for probably an equal weight is the leisure traveler that comes to the Twin Cities for tourism.
Thank you very much, Mr. Edmund. Would you please provide the committee with an organizational chart and an explanation of at least the titles of the 50 employees that work with you?
Certainly, Madam Chair. I actually have that on my overhead, but I figured you wouldn't be able to read it, so we'll get that too.
Yeah, we want to read it.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Lucinda Winter, Film and TV Board. Monday night, or Monday evening, we are having the governor's recommendations and proposals of the budget items, and the with his recommendations for the constitutional amendment. So there will be some other departments here that aren't in our jurisdiction, or people we will be talking about the recommendations in the Department of Ag and the Department of Health, the PCA, the Department of Natural Resources, that aren't our regular people, but he's got a vision evidently for the constitutional amendment money. And but our regular accounts also are mentioned in some cases. So all those accounts, plus those agencies that I mentioned and the PFA, should probably plan on coming to the meeting on Monday in case something comes up and there are questions. And there might be exchanges of philosophy. Film Board.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lucinda Winter. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Film and Television Board. I'd like to thank the Chair and Committee for inviting me to come and tell you a little bit about what your State Film Commission, how we were established, what we do. And I'll try to keep it brief for you.
Thank you, because we are a little over.
I will see you along here. One of the tools that we have is a production guide that we produce annually, and I'm passing a copy of that around that you can look at while I'm proceeding here. But the Minnesota Film and Television Board was established in 1983. Every state, just about except North Dakota, in the country has a film commission. Every country has a film commission. Every protectorate and principality has a film commission. Most of them are appointed by the governor of a state, the president or prime minister of a country. Most of them are state or federal agencies. We're a little unusual. Just so you know, what we were one of the last states to have a film commission established, and the reason. The reason we were established is an interesting story. Judith Guest, a Minnesotan who wrote a book called Ordinary People, was hosting Robert Redford in the state in 78 or early 79 to take a look at where they could shoot, find out what the resources were in the state, how they were going to get the movie made. And she picked Robert Redford up, so the folklore goes, and at the airport, and they were going to go and take a tour and look around for places to shoot the movie that he was going to direct. And he said, let's have our first stop should be the film commission, because they're going to be able to give us a lot of good ideas about locations and really just smooth things out for us. And Judith turned to him and said, we don't have a film commission. And he basically said, well, then we're going to make the movie in Illinois. And they went to Chicago. That movie went on to win 4 Oscars, and it also stimulated a group of people in Minnesota who wanted to strengthen our film industry to approach Governor Al Quie and ask if he would consider consider establishing a film commission and funding it. He was uncomfortable with that idea. So this group of people took that no and went back and thought about it and came back and said, what if we established a public-private partnership and tax dollars were matched with private dollars? And thus we became one of the only film commissions in the country to be a public-private partnership and a 501c3. Our annual appropriation currently is $325,000. We do not receive any of those funds until we make our match from private contributions, and that is a 1-to-3 match. So for every $1,000 someone gives me, I get $3,000 from my appropriation. And the way we raise the money we need to make our match, we do the production guide is a moneymaker for us that we're passing around. That's an annual guide to the people and resources you need to work in our state, an overview of things like child labor laws, connections to Minnesota Department of Transportation, and other resources people need to have if they're going to shoot successfully in our state. It's really a marketing tool for the state of Minnesota and a marketing tool for the people and businesses who work in the production industry in the state so that they can get connected with people who want to hire them and use their services, whether it's rental of equipment or post-production services, location scouts, whatever they're looking for. It's a one-source stop for them that they can use to connect with Minnesotans in the industry. Currently, of course, now over this publication has been ongoing every year since 1983, but currently, as you can imagine, the website version of our guide has become more and more important, just as our website has been. So we also offer people the opportunity to list and be online in our guide so they can be searched from anywhere in the world without having to have the book. Another way that we generate funds is by having a gala once a year. We just started that again. We do events more as fundraisers than we do fundraisers, but that's an important part of it too. So, just a little bit about our organization. We are a very small organization. Because we are a 501c3, our oversight and management is, of course, to Explore Minnesota Tourism, our funder. But in addition, I have a board of directors. They are volunteers from the production community, all sectors. We try to represent all sectors on our board, which is why we have 26 people. I have union representation. I have corporate representation, entertainment attorneys. I have a CPA on my board. I have filmmakers, commercial makers, people who represent really all segments of the production industry so their voice can be heard on the board. As far as staff goes, we have a full-time executive director. We have a full-time marketing coordinator whose job also includes our website. And we have a production services manager who handles our core services. Two contractors, a web person, and a snowbait administrator. That person has an accounting background. And then we have a part-time office coordinator. And the office coordinator position until very recently was full-time, but in anticipation of an allotment, when we had a resignation in November, we decided to make that a part-time position so that we would have some cash reserve if we were confronted with an allotment. And we'll go with that till June until things go there. What are our core services? What do we really do for the state of Minnesota? In addition to the traditional core services of a film commission, which I'll get to, one of the most important things we're doing currently is we are administering Snowbait. Snowbait is our brand name for Minnesota's Film Production Jobs Program, which is what it's called in statute. This is there are two flavors of incentive for production. Production incentives are on fire. There are 35 states with production incentives. We have a rebate, which is a reimbursement of Minnesota expenses. Some states have opted to offer a tax credit. Either way, what it is a way to it's a means, a tool for states to attract production to their states. And the reason so many states are in the business of offering incentives is because they create jobs. They bring dollars to a state. This is a green industry. And it's an industry that doesn't require a state to invest in capital improvements to make it happen. So there are a lot of reasons why states are in the game. But most importantly, It's because it's a job generator, and it is a generator of revenue and dollars into the state. And it's a very, very, it's a quick return from the time you put up an incentive to the time that people start coming to your state. Just to give you a quick snapshot of where Minnesota sits in the incentive environment. Pennsylvania offers, has in their appropriation each year currently, and this could change at any time, but currently they have $70 million that they provide annually in their incentive program. Right now Michigan is at $50 million as a cap. New York has 50, I guess it is right now. So there are some states with some very serious appropriations that they are using to attract production. And Minnesota, my annual appropriation for snow day is $650,000 each year. As John mentioned, last year we had an extra $500,000 appropriation for a movie project. That movie project was The Coen Brothers, A Serious Man. The reason that money was appropriated was because we were in competition, very serious competition for that movie with Wisconsin. And in order for us to be competitive in any way with Wisconsin's 25% tax credit, we needed to see if we can make up some of the difference between what they would have spent there and what they would spend here. And just to bust one myth, because I've heard a lot, well, the Coens were going to shoot here anyway, or of course they'd want to shoot here. Of course they did want to shoot here, but they don't make the decision. Clint Eastwood doesn't make the decision about where he's going to shoot. These decisions are made by the distribution companies, the Universal's, Warner Brothers, Focus Features of the world, and they're going to shoot the movie, even if it makes absolutely no sense, as Gran Torino's decision to shoot in Michigan did. They're going to shoot it where you're most cost effective. And that's the dilemma we face and the challenge that I face with the Snowbait program. In addition to administering Snowbait, and I do have a person in the office who has an accounting background who helps me administer that, and frankly is the front line of administering that program. We also offer, and very importantly, because this is how we bring business to our state and help people in business in the state to do well, scouting and location services, digital location photography. So we basically can, if somebody calls me and they say they're looking for a barn, and they're looking for a storefront, they're looking for a main street, they're looking for a courthouse, whatever it is they're looking for, we try to help them by sending them photos to show them what we have and spark their interest so we can bring them in and then really sell them in on the state. That's one of the things we do. We scouted, for example, this year, Gran Torino. They came here, they looked around, they were in full realization of our great Hmong acting community. That movie was written by a Minnesotan. And we had a very successful scout with them, 2-day scout. Unfortunately, the decision was made to go to Michigan because of their incentive. But those are the sorts of things we do. We scout. Another thing we did recently, just to give you an idea, we went to Fergus Falls, not once but twice, and presented to the city council. So there was a movie that wanted to shoot in Fergus Falls. They wanted to use their unused regional treatment center, which is a very large piece of real estate, a big old building. And we went there twice in support of the filmmaking in that community. So we do things like speak to city councils if that's what we need to do. Anything we can do throughout the state to promote this industry and help filmmakers and TV makers and commercial makers, documentarists, music video artists get their work done in the state. Also, of course, we produce the production guide. Another core service, in addition to the obvious, which is we have to maintain and every day we update our website. We also support students and emerging filmmakers, and I'm using the word filmmaker very broadly. This can be a person who's making a documentary, a person who's making, a TV show, whatever it is. We're using the word filmmaker broadly. And the reason we do that and the reason our Snowbait program has no floor on it is because in addition to trying to attract Hollywood here because they bring money, they bring dollars, they bring jobs, we also want to support emerging artists in our state. We try to support student filmmakers. We judge student filmmaking competitions. We provide 2 scholarships to student filmmakers to complete their senior projects. We really do try to support. That's why you can, if you have a $50,000 movie, we had one $12,000 movie come through Snowbait. They followed all the rules. They had their financial house in order. And those are the filmmakers who eventually, if they're good, are going to become filmmakers with bigger budgets, and we want to see those people make their movies here and be able to stay here and be do their work here and have a career here. So we really believe that we need to be supporting both attracting Hollywood and supporting indigenous artists here in order for us to have a long-term healthy industry. The way our work is both planned and judged is every year we create, and I've included one in the Leave Behind, we create an annual work plan, and we follow that work plan. It has both financial objectives, how much music video production am I going to track, how many TV series am I going to track. I have to put dollars to those objectives. And then at the end of the year, and there are also objectives like certain, you know, if we want to make a certain improvement to our website, those sorts of things are in there. But most of our objectives are tied to economic impact that we have. And at the end of the year, I have to report what I plan to do against what I actually accomplished. And we do a production survey to see what kind of dollars we've been able to generate for the state. And those things are in your Leave Behind. I think that, you know, additionally, what's important for you to know, and certainly I'll field any questions, but I'll just give you a little example, and some of this is in your Leave Behind as well. But we can talk, for example, because I have preliminary numbers, about our work and the work that we put into attracting, let's talk about Serious Man as a case study. The film was here from July through November that it created. There were about 130 Minnesotans on the payroll during that production. They directly spent cut checks during production from their budget, $6.3 million. The state collected in sales tax and income tax on residents and non-residents, $622,000. And we also are required to do FTEs on our jobs because we have unusual jobs. They're not full time where you go in the morning and you come out at night. There were 30 FTEs created by just that production. On a broader scale, if we were to look at this 2-year fiscal so far, I have those numbers as well for you to review. I have the jobs created, the money spent, and the sales tax and income taxes collected are in your Leave Behind. So our biggest job and our vision going forward is to create a program in this state where people who want to remain in the state, practice their craft in the state, can do so because they can find paying work to sustain themselves and their families. We also want to attract Hollywood to Minnesota because it provides dollars, it provides jobs, and also it provides training. You're working with the best people and the sharpest people in the business, and that helps you sharpen your professional skills. And it brings a lot of attention to our state, which we think is a big benefit to you. Questions?
Thank you very much. Representative Erba.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. Winters. First of all, I want to commend you for the work that you do based upon the relatively low amount of money that the state of Minnesota appropriates. Could you provide us with a list of the Snowbait recipients?
We can. What we do is when a company is approved, it's always a production company, it's never an individual. You have to have a production company incorporated to be in the program. What we do is we assign them numbers. So every production company becomes a number. And from then on, as we are accounting for them, we go by their number, their entity number and their project number. And the only reason, yes, we can provide that, but we'll just have to put those back into the information sure. Because we try to, although this is all public information, people are very uncomfortable about having all of their, one of the things that concerns people both in Hollywood and commercial companies is that if you release all the information about who they are, you'll have a lot of people after them, you know, with resumes. So, yeah, we can release that to you, absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Sure.
Representative
Virgo. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just maybe this is more of a comment. Now, the Dillinger was made in Wisconsin, correct?
Yes. Well, it was Wisconsin. Are you talking about Public Enemy, the new Public
yes.
Enemy? Yeah, that was made in both Wisconsin and Illinois.
It's just a question and a comment. What are Wisconsin's incentives?
They have a 25% tax credit, and it applies to not only Wisconsin residents and Wisconsin businesses, but non-residents as well. And that's a philosophical choice that they make. Ours is truly a Minnesota jobs program, and if you actually ever read the statute, which controls our decisions about how we put the program together, we are all about Minnesota jobs. So if you are a non-resident and you come and work here on a commercial or a documentary or movie or TV series, we will collect income taxes from you while you're on that project. But the production company will not receive a rebate on your wages because you are not a Minnesota resident. It only is directed to you. And the reason we're doing that is because we want to encourage production companies to use as many Minnesotans and as many Minnesota companies as possible.
And just a brief concluding comment. I would hope that at some point we could incentivize more because we look at films being written in Minnesota, by Minnesotans,
right,
about Minnesota, and they go to some other state to make the movie. And I think it would be natural if we do the same, like Juno, for example.
Juno is another very good example. And just as a concluding comment, because it does line up with what Representative Erdahl is saying, is that it's interesting to me that if you look all the way back to Judith Guest, and she did Rachel River after she did Ordinary People Here, we have a reputation and a history of Minnesota people writing screenplays. Some of them made here, many of them not made here. But we don't just want to be a Hollywood backlot. We want to encourage the people who have these creative skills, the Nick Shanks of the world who wrote Gran Torino, Ken who wrote the movie that's out now, New in Town. We want to encourage them to stay here, and we want to have an industry here so that they can hone their craft and keep us on the map, let other people learn more about Minnesota and our culture and our stories. So that's what we're really about and why I feel that, this is a good place for us to be talking to you, because this is about an indigenous industry as much as it is about attracting Hollywood.
I've been told that there's going to be filler to institutes, and so I'm sure that will come before us, and so this will not be the last time that you're here before us, Ms. Wright, and we appreciate your background and the background that you gave us today. If you could do an organizational chart, I would appreciate
sure,
it.
Absolutely.
And give us an idea of the number of employees, and then I think in here there's the number of jobs.
Mm-hmm. Right, I'll do that.
Are mentioned. But several people have come to me in the past few weeks and said, get Ricky McManus back in service.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't quite understand what that was all about, but these people from northeastern Minnesota that are come down for something else, and they say, take care of Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
And I see Ricky McManus is in the audience, and he seems to be affiliated with productions in northeastern Minnesota.
Right.
Do we have a Ricky McManus all the way across the state? And what happened to the funds that she was working with?
That's a really good question. Ricky McManus, well, for one thing, has a very long-term relationship with the film board because she was...
Ricky put we...
Yeah, Ricky...
So everybody can see you.
And is currently working on a movie that would like to come and shoot at the Glenteen Mansion, which would be great. And, of course, they would like snowbait money, and right now there's a wait list for our current funds. But Ricky has a very long-term relationship, longer than me, with the Film Commission. She's been a board member. I don't know when you went on the board, but she's been a board member. And when she moved to the Duluth area, she sold her business here, which is a casting business, and moved there and opened the Upper Minnesota Film Office, which was funded by, and I don't want to, there were funders including, I believe, St. Louis County, Duluth. When some of that funding started to dry up, was right about the same time that North Country shot up in the Iron Range. And the Film Commission, and this again was before I became executive director, but I was on the board then and voted on this, we decided that we would like to have Ricky help us with, because North Country needed a representative on the ground up there. And we agreed to start paying Ricky to help us with North Country, and that continued on. What we need to do at this point, and what we are doing, is because of the very question, Madam Chair, that you have asked, is we are developing a policy for regional or city offices, how we could help them with some funding, get some, if there were matches. We're creating a policy because our concern is, and Explore Minnesota Tourism's concern is, that if another city, like say Rochester, which is a growing city, were to approach us and ask for help with funding for someone, we need to have a policy in place that we can apply for all those requests. And we're in the midst of developing such a policy that would apply to Upper Minnesota Film Office, Duluth, Rochester, Detroit Lakes, whoever were to ask us.
Good. Thank you very much. I was on I-4B when we funded Wild Rose, but it has a different name at the end.
Yeah.
I have the original transcript in my bookcase.
Thank you for having me today. I appreciate the time.
Welcome to the Committee of the Children Museums of Minnesota and Duluth. Ms. Russo?
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you very much for having me. My name is Sarah Caruso, and I'm president of Minnesota Children's Museum. I would also like to introduce Denise Bossy, who is in the audience, who is our chief development officer and my partner in many aspects of the museum, especially relating to raising funds. I have, I believe, 10 minutes for my presentation. And I do not have an overhead PowerPoint. I just have the paper that's being put in front of you. And there were three areas I wanted to cover at rather a high level, and would be happy to provide written detail on anything you might want. First, I just want to tell you a little bit about the museum and our background. I want to talk to you about the museum as a cultural and arts destination, and also talk about the museum as an early learning destination. Minnesota Children's Museum is a strong statewide resource. We take the name Minnesota in our name very seriously. And as you will see on the map, we have very strong attendance, 430,000 visitors per year, with 18% coming from greater Minnesota and 10% actually coming from outside Minnesota, primarily in the summer months. So we are indeed a destination that attracts families from throughout the state and across the upper Midwest. We are also an organization that has very strong commitment to community in a variety of ways. 30% of our visitors come at free or reduced admission. And I would challenge you, as you hear from all the organizations that you will hear from during this session, to find another organization that offers as much economic access as we do. All our school and group visits come free. We work with every Head Start program in the metro area. They come free. We have a completely free day once a month. There are many programs. We have library partnerships. We don't want a family in Minnesota to be turned away from the museum because of economic difficulty. We also have very strong community partnerships. We have 50 active partnerships with education and cultural institutions. And for an organization of our size, that I think shows a very strong commitment to building true bridges throughout the community. If you look at the map, you'll see that our visitors come from 85 of our 87 counties. And if any of you have friends or happen to represent Pennington or Lake of the Woods counties, we would be very happy to welcome visitors and fill out our map completely. I think of equal importance, we have a very wide draw of school group visits. 37 counties send school groups. I have read wonderful notes from kindergarten teachers who say it's worth the hour and a half bus ride to bring my children to your museum. That's a big commitment from a kindergarten teacher. So again, we are a statewide resource, and we want to provide those services as broadly as possible. So what do we do when the families and the children come to the museum? We are located just down the hill in downtown St. Paul on the corner of 7th and Wabasaw. We welcome all of you for a visit if you haven't had a chance to come. We our mission is to spark children's learning through play, and our target audience is very young, children birth through 10 years old. And again, with our partners at the Duluth Children's Museum, as you'll hear our friends, we are the only institutions in Minnesota exclusively focused on this very young audience. And this is an important audience because learning begins at birth. And we want to nurture that love of learning among those children. And we know from our child development experts, from our PhD educators on staff, that the best way for very young children to learn is through play. That's how they're developing cognitive skills, emotional connections, social skills that get them ready for kindergarten and get them ready for life. You can see our audiences, the children, the parents, the school groups, and the educators, all the adults who support the lives of the young children. And we believe our museum has very significant public value. We help prepare children for kindergarten, and we also are often the first cultural destination for children and their families in the state. So we are helping provide that cultural experience in a developmentally appropriate way. And I think that, again and again, distinguishes our offering, is that we're exclusively focused on these very young children who learn a little differently than we do as adults. How do we do this work? On the next page, we have 7 galleries that cover a variety of content areas from environmental education, math and science, culture, creative arts, and so forth. We have many programs that happen throughout the museum day. And we, again, I want to emphasize our very strong partner with our schools in the 37 counties. They come to us, and we go to them, reinforcing the learning through the state standards that have been set by the Department of Education, working to reinforce the learning for our youngest citizens in the state. If you'll turn to the page, there you go, with a bar chart that has some of our financial information on it. Again, at a very high level, we're happy to provide in more detail, but you'll see that we have a relatively modest total budget of $5.8 million, which includes a $260,000 appropriation that we have received previously, which is about 5% of our operating budget. We have about 73 FTEs with a payroll of a little over $3 million, and we will be happy to provide you, Madam Chair, with the organizational chart and job description that accompany that. Our state funding supports our access programs and our education partnerships. So briefly, I want to mention why we are very much an arts and culture destination. I think you all have a fascinating challenge ahead of you over the next few months to define not only which organizations qualify under the amendment and also how you're going to distribute those funds. I have put on the top of the next few pages a definition that I won't take time to read, but I just looked up in the dictionary what is art and what is arts education, and have summarized sort of an academic approach to these words, which I think have many interpretations. And then below you can see that the museum very much provides arts and arts education. Especially again for very young children, children learn through creative expression and the arts. Think of your children, your grandchildren, your nieces and nephews sitting at the kitchen table, drawing, putting on costumes, acting things out. These are all things we bring into the museum, put a child development and learning spin on them, and provide them for all children. Literacy is also very important to what we do. We have book notes in each of our galleries, and we promote many literacy and pre-literacy skills for the youngest children. In the next page, I just talk about culture. What is culture, and how is that defined in the dictionary? It's human intellectual development. Again, our museum is often the first cultural destination for children and their families in the state. We are really providing the seeds and the germs for a love of learning and for intellectual achievement. And finally, arts access, which I think is very correctly called out in the amendment as an important goal for the use of these funds. And I talked briefly about 30% of all of our visitors coming as free or reduced admissions. That value is about $800,000 that we are happily giving to the citizens of Minnesota so they can attend. I also want you to note our ethnic diversity that we've been able to attract at the museum. We, through primarily through these community partnerships and our dedication to our mission, I actually have a more diverse audience coming to the museum based on our measurement than the entire state has. And so we do not want to be an organization which is any way exclusionary. We want all children, all families, whatever their background, to feel comfortable at our museum. And that is not a small undertaking for sort of a large cultural institution. You have to work hard to make sure everyone feels comfortable there. I also want to address our role as an early learning destination, so here we go. Our founding is very much based on the belief that young children learn from birth and that that needs to be celebrated and modeled for all families in the state. And as you know, there is a lot of discussion around early childhood education at the legislature with various public and private organizations in town and throughout the state. And that's important because Minnesota is a little bit behind, frankly, some other states in this area. And we have a role at the Minnesota Children's Museum to support that. Every visit to the museum helps a child develop intellectual, cognitive, and social skills, which is what the educators tell us are needed to get ready for kindergarten. Every gallery in our museum is aligned with Minnesota state standards, either the early learning standards or the early elementary school standards, again, on math, science, social science, literacy, and the various topics. And finally, every gallery is designed by child development experts who understand how a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old learn. That is what is special about our institution. Everything we do is custom designed only for the children. And then we have messaging for the parents. Parents need support too, and I have a page on the status of parents in Minnesota. Parents need support because they are the child's primary teacher. They are driving the activities that the children are involved in. And nearly 50% of Minnesota's children do not go to any sort of preschool or daycare experience before coming to kindergarten. So where do parents take those children to help them learn how to be comfortable in a social environment, how to be comfortable in a broader setting, how to get new ideas about how to teach their children? One of the places they come is Minnesota's Children's Museum. We also have strong parent-child classes that we offer in Hmong, in Spanish, and in English. And again, we take those off-site to our community partners, 100% of the time to families in need to reach out and help strengthen their parenting skills. And finally, we, as I've mentioned, we work in deep partnership with the school systems, both the pre-elementary school systems, the Head Starts, the daycare, the early education systems, as well as we welcome 66,000 children and their teachers to our site every year.
Thank you very much. We had, we hosted tribal councils and the annual meeting of the tribal leaders this week on Monday and Tuesday, and I don't see that under your diversity list that you have Native American or American Indian. I expect they're part of the other.
They are part of the other, and yes.
Thank you. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a big difference between your summer attendance and your school year attendance? And if so, does this have any impact on your staffing needs?
Madam Chair, Representative, our biggest attendance period starts December 26th, the day after Christmas, and runs through June. And that's driven both by our school group attendance peaks in that kind of March, April, May time frame, And also during the winter months, you know, bad weather outside is good attendance for us inside.
Mr. Garcia, for the Children's Museum. Mr. Sierkowski. Cutting it right down to the wire.
Any questions?
So, Ms. Caruso said you were a partner. How does that work?
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. It's a privilege to be with you today. I'm glad to be joined by Richard Jaworski, our Director of Operations, Exhibits, and Programs. To answer your question, our partnership is an informal partnership with the Minnesota Children's Museum, in that the Duluth Children's Museum is in fact a 78-year-old cultural institution in the state of Minnesota. Founded in the days when assuming the state name and putting it on a cultural institution was regarded as being rather uppity in northern Minnesota. And so we took the Duluth Children's Museum as our name and looked very regional. Our relationship with the Minnesota Children's Museum is a close and professional one. We work collegially in that we exchange information with one another, and the Minnesota Children's Museum is one of the premier developers of rotating and traveling exhibits for the field, and the Duluth Children's Museum has had the distinct honor of renting those exhibits from the Minnesota Children's Museum, and at times when they have been retired, like our castle exhibit, which is one of our most popular perennial exhibits, we purchased it from the Minnesota Children's Museum. So that more defines our relationship as an informal partner. The Duluth Children's Museum is in fact the fifth oldest children's museum in the nation. It was established in Duluth in the Duluth public school systems by an arts educator, Mabel Wing, and she administered it in its early years until it moved out of the Duluth schools into a home, a private residence, a very famous woman who everybody in Duluth called Diamond Lil. Lillian Chisholm donated her home on 2nd Street to the school district for the exclusive use of the Children's Museum. The Children's Museum remained there until after her death, and it was housed there until the school district determined that it could no longer be as strong a financial partner as it had been. The depot in Duluth, the St. Louis County Heritage and Arts Center on Michigan Street, was coming into play at that time and was under development, and the Duluth Children's Museum became one of the first collaborators and partners in the development of that cultural resource for Duluth. We have remained in that site for over 30 years, the entire time the depot has been open, and it saddens me to report to you today that after 30 years of attendance in that building, there is still no sign on that building that says the Duluth Children's Museum is there, or that says the Duluth Playhouse is there. One of our major dilemmas has been the individual identity of the entities that reside in the depot versus the depot as a whole in its marketing. So we kind of lost our identity along the way. However, we have become very strong in the last 3 years. We have grown dramatically. Our membership numbers have gone from very modest, serving 77 households through membership services 4 years ago, to serving just over 1,100 households, serving 5,543 individuals through membership services today. 3 years ago, Rebecca Lewis at DSGW Architects volunteered her services and came in and did an organizational scan and a space use analysis for the Duluth Children's Museum. At that time, she reported that given our growth projection and our current service to the community, that the museum needed to have no less than 22,000 square feet of operating space, and we were operating in 7,500 disjointed feet within the depot at that time. And she, as an architect, looked at us and said, I've never seen anybody use the cubic footage that they have to such a remarkable extent. But we can't put children up there safely. We want to look out for children's safety. So the Board of Trustees set about a very ambitious endeavor. And they started to look at relocating the Duluth Children's Museum, thanking the depot and the county for its long historic support and presence in the depot, but saying the time had come where we had to reposition ourselves in the community. The end result of that was that we decided that the Heritage Sports Center, the development of Clyde Park and Lincoln Park in West Duluth, was the most ideal location for the new Children's Museum. Today, when you travel to Duluth, you'll see a very beautiful 48-foot billboard. Thank you very much to Lamar Outdoor Advertising, who put it up there for us as a gift, on top of the building we propose to occupy on Helm Street, right near our new cultural Heritage Sports Center. Clyde Park development is going to become, and is becoming fast, a hot destination for not just Duluth, but for the entire region. If you're not familiar with the development, two sheets of ice have been laid down. They're competition-sized ice, and one of those two sheets will be floor sports. The other one will operate as ice arena 24/7, 365 days a year. In addition, independent real estate developer Alex Giuliani, who owns the building we're moving into, will break ground on March 1st in a boutique hotel that will occupy the property. There are hotels, restaurants, shops, and a 1,200-seat performance venue coming to the site, in addition to the Duluth Children's Museum. Our board of trustees and our treasurer, who is a general partner at Colquitt Sites and Goldman, James Christensen, did a scan of museums across the entire region, and the findings that you have in our four-year financial projections on your inside last page show you that upon our relocation, the Duluth Children's Museum will grow from its very modest budget, I hear $5 million and think, ooh, with envy, from our current $437,000 budget to a budget of approximately $817,000. That is our forecast and our growth rate that is anticipated based on our research. Some of the more exciting things about the organization is that it has the power and the potential to grow. In the last biennium, we received a $100,000 appropriation from the state of Minnesota, $50,000 in each of the years of biennium. It was shepherded through by Senator Solon, and we were helped in that process, and those monies come from the Department of Education. On allotments has not been discussed with us. We've been told our funding is secure in this current and second year of that biennial request. Like all of you, we're very excited and anxious, looking forward to the detail of the governor's budget next week and seeing whether or not that placeholder remains in the Department of Education or not. Having said that, money from the Cultural Heritage Bill is imperative to our financial success. This represents ongoing operating support, the most difficult money there is to raise in a nonprofit institution. And I say that because the majority of the foundations and the corporations that support cultural tourism in the state of Minnesota happen to be located somewhere other than in northern Minnesota. Increasingly, we have seen a decrease of participation of state funding organizations in the interest of organizations that are in greater Minnesota. And I tell you that because we are facing a financial crisis, as many are today. You're seeing cultural institutions announce they're closing, they're going dark, Heart of the Beast, Intermedia Arts, other organizations. We are on the verge of that situation ourselves. However, we can see light at the end of the tunnel, and we see that light in a variety of sources, including the allocation of dollars from this bill. I would like Mr. Jaworski, who's joined me today, Madam Chairman, members of the committee, to take just a few minutes to talk about our access program and to highlight the program and delivery services that we have at the Duluth Children's Museum.
3 minutes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, our current access program, social access program that we engage in, provides people who have normally don't have access to our institution through conventional purchases of membership to be able to apply for membership to our institution without any kind of qualification for that. This program provides 44% of our membership total currently. So our demographic in the Duluth area, which indicates that the working poor and people who can't afford those kinds of memberships, is in line with the need that we have currently for those people getting those social access programs. We currently deal with three ways of programming. Our programming and exhibits and our collection connection that we provide to the public. We want to maintain our membership statistics at this level in order to be able to maintain financial stability and continue membership growth. So we try to incorporate our outcome-based evaluation to be able to facilitate that and to maintain our stability. Our exhibits, and we have launched into an aggressive exhibit program currently. Right now we're, like Mr. Garcia mentioned, that we utilize traveling exhibits from other institutions. We also purchase some exhibits that have been retired and provide these to the public and try to maximize on the resources there. We are also very blessed in the fact that we have a collection that is very, very old and has provided cultural access to the community for almost 80 years. And we are taking steps to maintain proper stewardship of this collection through collaboration currently with the Tweed Museum, and which gives us a good assessment of the nature of this connection, this collection, the relevance it has to the community, and increase its visibility within the community.
Representative Houston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You've mentioned memberships. Does that equate to attendance, or what was your 2008 attendance?
Our annual attendance is approximately 70,000 people. And this, of course, since we're a multi-use institution with the depot, goes hand in hand with the people that come to the depot as a whole. But our membership currently is at over 1,100 individuals serving, or families serving over 5,000 individuals. And this is a growth rate that's increased from the last fiscal year where we had 400 and some odd memberships.
I guess what I was trying to figure is that you've used the term membership, but what I was trying to figure out is attendance. And the membership numbers are here, but is there a relationship?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, if I could address that. As Rich has suggested, the difficulty we have being in a mixed-use facility is that we do not collect and report the attendance figures. The depot does. And one of the things that we're most excited about in our relocation is the introduction of bar scanning technology to allow us to measure and the ability to measure the frequency that our members come. Right now, our members aren't necessarily reported because they're duplicative reporting for the depot, and they just look at gate revenue. So when we say 70,000, that's our best guess, uneducated estimate, and we will have better data as soon as we can get it, as soon as we're in a better place. We did also provide our staffing chart and our FTEs. We did do a 25% staff reduction on January 1st. A large part of our current financial situation at the depot and the Children's Museum is tied up in our federal government's continuing resolution status of the Health and Human Services Bill. We are directly named as an appropriation recipient in the Labor, Health, and Human Services Bill, which was in fact to be acted on today, but due to the demise of candidate Tom Daschle, that decision has been postponed 2 weeks, and the funding recommendation has been postponed 2 weeks. But I think you're going to hear some very good news out of Congressman Oberstar's office in the very near future about stabilizing the current financial situation for the Children's Museum. We've had a three-year appropriation bill before Congress, but because of the state of labor, health, and human services being in the continuing resolution, we've never realized the funds from that bill, and now it's time.
We'd love to get good news from Congressman Oberstar's office. When do you anticipate moving into the new quarters in West End?
The analysis for the capital campaign occurred last spring, in fact a year ago at this time. We launched our trial and quiet campaign effort in October of 2008, and then a whole bunch of financial things happened in the world that were not favorable. Our goal was to relocate and to be in there in October. We are a shovel-ready project. We have all the pre-design work done. We have all the development work done. We have a development cost for the site of about $4 million. We are currently seeking investors, and we are now in the state construction project list to be reviewed by the stimulus package potential for eligibility of that. We don't have a date at this time, but we have the ability to move quickly when the money is identified.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee.
Mrs. Ann Morgan.
Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes as submitted from Monday, February 2.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted for February 2nd. Representative Morgan.
Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes from Monday, January 26th, as submitted.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. This meeting is adjourned.